future, I see AI as one way of letting someone with the equivalent of a high school education do the work of someone with a PhD. The human interface behind a lot of the tools that are being used now can make someone with a low level of education an incredibly productive worker.
If we are not able to provide a better mechanism to judge which is true, which is false, there will be a lot of dangers. And some people, some kind of groups, maybe they will intentionally to use this leak or some of the weak point of the international market to trying to make a big deal. That is really threatening to the stability of the international market.
The biggest piece that's missing right now is enforcement. If criminals are certain that they will be caught and punished, you know, it doesn't matter how powerful the tools are, we'll see much less of this kind of undesirable behavior.
The Chat Lounge.
Chat Lounge.
Chat Lounge.
The Chat Lounge unpacks views and opinions on hot issues in a more casual way.
Welcome to the Chat Lounge. I'm Tuyun, joining our discussion on how far artificial intelligence can go are Andy Mok, a senior research fellow at the Center for China and Globalization, William Lee, chief economist at the U.S.-based Milken Institute, and Dr. Jomi, deputy director, Institute of American and Oceania Study, Chinese Academy of International Trade and Economic Cooperation. Welcome back to the chat, gentlemen. So a group of leading Chinese high-tech firms have teamed up with their American counterparts to publish the first global standards on generative artificial intelligence, or Gen AI, and large language models, also known as LLM. These technologies are behind AI services such as OpenAI's ChatGPT and Microsoft's Copilot. Well, the aim is to expedite the establishment of norms and standards to ensure IT security. But before we explore the standards, let's first turn our attention to India, where AI has played an actually undesirable role in the ongoing general election. Fake videos of two of India's A-list Bollywood actors criticizing Prime Minister Narendra Modi and campaigning for the opposition Congress Party have raised fears of AI meddling in India's election. And according to reports, in a 30-second video that shows Aamir Khan and a 41-second clip of Ranveer Singh, the two Bollywood actors purportedly say Modi failed to keep campaign promises and failed to address critical economic issues during his two terms as prime minister. First, a quick question to you all. Have you watched the clips? And if yes, how believable do these fake videos seem to you? Let me start with Andy.
Well, I have not seen these actual clips that you mentioned. I've seen many, many like them, though. So, and I think that the question is not necessarily how believable they are currently, and some of them are quite good, but we can see before too long they are going to be very, very good. So I think on the one hand, there's a lot of concern about this. But at the same time, I think that this is a short-term problem that is self-correcting in right. that as people become increasingly aware of the capabilities of AI for deepfakes, they will also become more skeptical as well. And I think deception is as old as mankind itself. And humans have faced these kinds of problems with every new major technology, from writing and paper to the telephone to radio and television. So in a sense, I think this is nothing new, but that doesn't mean that we, in particular the government, should not take steps to mitigate the short-term harm for this. But I think this is a problem that ultimately will correct itself.
It's a, to me, it's a big problem because you're saying people will get more skeptical. What a world is waiting for us ahead. What about William? Have you watched the clips?
Well, actually, I haven't seen the Indian ones, but I've seen some examples of people putting words into some political characters' mouths here in the United States.
Right.
And while many of the videos have an artificial sense to them because the sync isn't exactly right, I think these are one of the early stages. And as Andy says, as technology improves and as time goes on, these things will become very, very real in the sense of very believable. Now, I agree with Andy that over time, people will learn to be skeptical about the kind of video evidence they generally see. And for those who care, will look in deep, more deeply into position papers and other such things. But here in the United States, attention spans are getting shorter and shorter. People's stamina for investigative knowledge seeking is getting more, much more limited. Mm. And so the influence of Facebook and TikTok and Reels and all these short videos has really shifted the emphasis toward initial video impressions. And initial video impressions seem to have lasting influence, especially if you see enough of them. And so my concern is this transition period that Andy's talking about, the short-term transition period, which may not be that short, where people are very impressionable and will form political judgments, value judgments, and even shift their sense of ethics if they hear enough of these very famous people say things that are completely outrageous and against what is normally considered a traditional value or traditional belief. Mm. So for me, it represents a great danger, immediate danger. As we will discuss later, I'm not convinced that a lot of the standards being put in place will have anything at all to do with solving the problem of people not being able to discern what is true and what is not true.
So you're saying that any effort will be fruitless?
The efforts I've seen so far don't seem to have a lot of potential for bearing fruit.
Right. Oh, we'll talk a little bit more about that later on in the show. But those two clips don't seem that persuasive to me because I watched them. You can easily tell they're not lip syncing. Dr. Joe, have you watched them?
Yeah, actually, you know, when I watch them, I still find that it's not so, you know, important for just to judge from my eyes, because, you know, these actors are really changeable. So they are playing different roles or different actors in different movies. So they can become fatter, they can become thinner. So it's very difficult for us to judge whether it is a person themselves. But as you say, that when they have some gesture, they are just aiming or just looking straight at the camera. It's not just like they are thinking something or just trying to express something, just as like performance. But I don't think it is a real, you know, challenge for the artificial intelligence. They can make the people, are, you know, believe that because a lot of people are not so familiar with these guys, and they just watched several movies, or they just decided from the first appearance or look, they will think that it is him, it is her, to, you know, who are giving us his or her opinion. Mm. So in my understanding, that when we are talking about the reality, what is the reality? Is the reality the real things, or just someone trying to give us the impression, especially with the support of the e-platforms? It's really very spreadable, and a lot of people are really believing that what they are looking at from the video, from the short video, or even some of the voices. So I think that is the real problem.
Right. Andy, you mentioned it's nothing new, actually. So wondering, any of you or anyone you know ever had such an experience, you know, being scammed or?
Well, I think, you know, these kinds of activities are very common. So, you know, we think about scam phone calls, emails, and I would put them in this category. The other thing I wanted to mention, too, that was just touched on is that for many people with political topics, they're not that persuadable anyway. And I think there are research studies to show that these efforts to deceive people on political subjects usually don't work. So I think that, you know, this is clearly something that governments should do something about.
Yeah.
I tend to agree with William that, you know, how effective they'll be, we'll see. But I'm ultimately optimistic because people adapt very quickly and they learn to, for instance, ignore emails promising you $1 million, right? Or phone calls, you know, looking to sell you real estate or make you loans or whatever. And I think that just people will pretty quickly, in my view, develop the defense mechanisms to screen out most of them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how good they are today, in a way, also doesn't matter, too, because the people that want to believe will believe. The people that don't probably won't, even if it were authentic. So this is one of the challenges of modern political life, I think.
Mm, yeah, indeed. And what about William? Do you have or anyone you know ever had a similar experience?
We've had several reports on U.S. news in the last 6 months or so talking about kidnappers who play a recording of a supposedly kidnapped daughter. Mm. And it turned out that person was actually someplace else, but the parent didn't know. And the parent was so concerned that they actually started to bring payoff money to the site. And fortunately, they were able to call the police and the police stepped in. So the fake fraud is getting to be much more pervasive. And one of the dangers of this technology is that it raises skepticism, as Andy says. And for me, if people start to disbelieve, they also start to detach.
Right.
If the people no longer can engage in the political process because they say, oh, everything you hear is fake, or these guys are all fakes, then when, at least for the way that U.S. democracy works, the more and more detached the public becomes, the less effective our democracy is and less representative it is. So for me, the danger for a democratic government would be to have more and more detachment as a result of more and more cynicism growing, because people say, well, you just can't believe what you see, or you can't believe what you hear, and even worse, you can't believe anything you hear or see. With those sort of attitudes, then the foundation of our American democracy is, for me, highly threatened.
In that sense,
William.
Yes,
William. Sir. So this makes me think of the Marvin Gaye song, believe half of what you see and none of what you hear.
That's terrible. Sounds terrible to me. Well, I think based on what William just said, the government also, you know, needs to do something at least, no matter whether it will bear any fruit. But apart from politics, fraud using AI-generated content also occurred in our daily lives or work. You know, earlier this year, a company in Hong Kong fell victim to deep fakes and suffered a $25 million loss, possibly the biggest deepfake scam involving generative AI technology. So, Dr. Zhou, how big a sensation was the scam, especially, you know, when it occurred in a financial center like Hong Kong? Can you tell us a little bit more about the scam?
Yeah, when I read that story, I found that, you know, for the financial corporation or, you know, kind of operation in Hong Kong and also around the world, it is happening very quick. So a lot of decisions have to be made in a very short term. So the operator cannot just try to verify what he heard from this message, and he just make some of this remittance with a lot of money. I think it's a kind of very common dangerous to many of these institutions, because international finance is happening real quick, and the amount of money are, you know, changing, you know, moving, transferring from one country, one region to another in a very short term. So a lot of opportunities are being grasped in this regard. And during this time, we still see that for the financial sectors, for this industry, a lot of artificial intelligence has been used. I mean, not only for the fake some news or videos, it's just trying to grasp of the opportunities in this market. So they are trying to judge from the up and down of the stock market price and make the decision of buying and selling them. So with these interactions, and some of them are still involved in the human interaction, but a lot of them are, you know, automatically doing. If we are not able to provide a better mechanism to judge which is true, which is false, maybe there will be a lot of dangers, and some people, some kind of groups, maybe they will intentionally to use this leak or some of the weak point of the international market to trying to make a big deal. And that is really are threatening to the stability of the international market. I think that is really dangerous.
So you're saying that it's highly likely it will happen again.
Because the international system is developing very quick. They are going to compete with each other. But so they have to use the better technology to compete with other investors on grasping the opportunities of the market.
But is it easy to clone such a scam? Because it's not like the two video clips featuring the Bollywood movie stars, which are quite simple. The Hong Kong scam, it involves a lot. Though there is only one fraudster, it involves a complicated process. It's like a video conference. It had to create several figures the victim is familiar with. So I'm wondering, how easy is it to clone such a scam?
I think that, in my understanding, it's not that difficult. If they can succeed once, they may have much more you know, experiences on doing that. So they can try to collect the real information from different parts. Like when we heard, we are receiving some phone calls, they telling us about a lot of information of ourselves, about our family, about education experiences and history. They want to convince us that they know us, that they are familiar with this. And actually, they are also are able to create a certain kind of scenarios to try to drag you to your, you know, the scenario you are not familiar with. So it's much easier for them to do that in that way. So I believe that both sides, I mean, from the administration side, they are also trying to do better to control that. But from the other side, they want to make better use of the tools to grasp opportunities to make some face the force or faked video information to the investors and operators.
Andy, do you have any idea how much it may cost to produce such a scam?
Well, you know, the cost, of course, is going down. And I think, you know, what scares some people, even maybe many people, and perhaps we all should be scared of this, is that the cost essentially is falling to zero, right? So, you know, you think about before to, before the digital age, to create, a very convincing fake might be many thousands of dollars and take you hours, if not days. Whereas, you know, we are rapidly approaching a world where you could probably do this in a few clicks on a keyboard, right? I mean, that's where it seems the technology is heading. So, and when you add in autonomous agents, so not only you can type in, you know, make me a video of this, make me, you know, a text of that, but you can create an agent that says, you know, go book me a trip to New York, and it takes care of the hotel, the airfare, everything. Now you imagine a malicious agent, right? Go research this person. Give me the most effective attack vector. Give me the most convincing content, and create it, you know, using the people this person's most likely to believe. And that can all be done, you know, at the click of a mouse. You know, that is a world that isn't too hard to imagine.
Right. You know, the scammed financial worker is well-educated and should have a high level of vigilance. If someone like him cannot spot a deepfake fraud, then how vulnerable are average people like me to, you know, this type of crime then? So our tech expert here...
Sorry, if I can add a bit to respond to that.
Right.
So we all have our weaknesses and vulnerabilities, right? So... no one is immune. I think that's an important point to first establish. But that being said, I think these are crimes of opportunity as well, meaning that if you catch even a very vigilant person at a moment when, you know, they're not paying attention or a temporary lapse in vigilance, you know, they will be a victim. So it's like, I think, you know, lock your door when you go out, right? Or lock your car door. Sometimes we forget. Even the most careful person forgets. And to me, you know, this is one issue. But the broader issue is really one of governance, because you guys are absolutely right saying that this could undermine trust in society and, more importantly, trust in government.
Right.
And I think once that happens, you know, society is moving towards a very, very bad place. And this is where I think government, you know, some governments are better positioned to do this, to not only pass the rules, the laws, but to enforce them and enforce the appropriate penalties. And where the penalties are severe enough and sure enough, then wrongdoers are deterred. And this is how you maintain or even increase trust in society. And here I think an orderly, lawful society is incredibly important, whether you're looking at AI deepfakes or other types of fraud.
This has been the Chat Lounge. When we come back, does the outlook of the AI sector still look as rosy as it was in the beginning?
Dive into news like never before with Deep Dive, the podcast from CGTN Radio. Join our global reporters for captivating stories and thought-provoking conversations. Search Deep Dive on your favorite podcast platforms and get ready to dive in.
Welcome back to the Chat Lounge. We're chatting about how far artificial intelligence can go. Why didn't those rules or regulations turn out to be as effective as they are supposed to be? You know, China and the European Union have also have introduced and adopted regulations and laws. And in 2021, the United Nations heritage body, UNESCO, introduced a recommendation on the ethics of AI, which has been adopted by its 193 member states. So, William, do you have an answer to this? Why haven't the...
Well, a code of ethics is great to have as a basis of discussion, but there's no enforcement mechanism there, and there's certainly no liability assignment. Our legal system hasn't caught up with how to assign liability for accidents or damage that's generated through the use of an AI-related instrument. Mm. There's a very famous case of a hospital, somebody who was in a hospital at University of Chicago, and his data, his case, medical case, was used to train an AI-related device at Google. And even though his data was anonymous and it couldn't be attributed to him, he sued. And Google said, well, look, he has no standing to sue because this guy was never damaged. No assignment of identity was made, and his information was completely anonymous. And the court ruled in Google's favor. Yeah, well, yeah, the guy had no standing. So the teeth behind the code of ethics is non-existent. So I think right now our legal system, I was in a seminar of legal high-level legal partners at international law firms on a session about AI and how to decide liability for AI-related injuries. And the discussion there was just all over the place. This is very hard to find, you know, was there proximity of the AI developer to the damage itself? Mm. Was there intent? Was there some kind of malfeasance going on? Was there some kind of a bad design? Who is receive blame for any kind of damage caused by AI? Is it the developer, the user? These are very, very big questions that are still unanswered, not only in the United States, but all over the world.
Indeed. We'll talk a little bit more about the designer maybe or the companies later on in the show. But Dr. Zhou, here on the Chinese mainland, it seems AI-related crimes are spreading maybe even faster and in many cases becoming impossible to guard against here, right? So what's your interpretation here?
Yeah, I think that in my understanding that AI is a kind of a new technology. The new technology is very vague for the boundaries. So we cannot just make it very clear about what are the privilege and what are the liabilities for different stakeholders in this regard. And that's the second is that we are still in the time for widespread or usage of the internet. The internet is a very big place, and there are so many interactions, and they're happening very quickly. Mm. So it needs a lot of enforcement abilities to also be enhanced to cope with the situation. I still remember that about 10 or even more years ago, there was a lot of virus and scams in the internet. So many companies are developing their softwares to give it free to the users to distribute to them and to protect that the society or the internet or even the computers. So many years later, we still are seeing some of the the virus. Scams in the internet, but it's not as frequently as before. So I think that the world needs some time to adjust its expectations and also the awareness. It is very important not only to just have some law and say that it is dangerous for a certain kind of people to do bad things and you will be fined or have some penalty. It is even more important for the people, for the community to understand the importance for us to know the differences. Maybe we need to be more attention on this issue, and we will not just try to believe a lot of things easily. So maybe it's not that easy, but I still believe that we can have some time to gain more experiences. Maybe we need some like the sandbox,
right,
to start off some kind of innovation and then spread to wider areas. Maybe we can start from the providers of the AI tools. Maybe they need to have some the water print for the videos, or remind some other users that the video are made from the tools instead of from the recording of the reality.
That's a good comparison and a good reminder of what's happened there. to be frank, I'm a little relaxed when you remind me of how this developed. Well, faced with myriad problems, AI-related tech firms themselves are also trying to do their bit. As mentioned, leading Chinese and American high-tech firms have teamed up to publish the first global standards on generative artificial intelligence and large language models, namely the Generative AI Application Security Testing and Validation Standard and the Large Language Model Security Testing Method. It's hard to remember these two names. But for the Gen AI standard, researchers from NVIDIA, Meta, and others wrote it with companies including Amazon, Google, Microsoft, and Baidu and Tencent reviewing the standards. And for the LLM standard, employees from China's Ant Group wrote it, and their peers at NVIDIA, Microsoft, Meta, and others reviewed it. So Andy, our expert here, can you help us understand what problems these companies are trying to solve by developing the two standards?
Well, I think first of all, with any important technological development, standards are incredibly important. They identify best practices, standardize them. They direct energy, brain power, financial resources towards the areas of most promising development. So this is very important. And I think that, you know, given that the U.S. and China are the two superpowers, I think it would not be an overstatement to say that in terms of developing and implementing artificial intelligence, that, you know, this is a very worthy endeavor. My concern is that politics may intrude, especially the destructive kind of politics that we see from the U.S., looking at trying to isolate China, or, you know, it's just remarkable to me how some American politicians talk about important technological developments like electric vehicles as if China doesn't exist. I remember hearing a few days ago, I think it was Steve Rattner, talking about the state of electric vehicles in the U.S. and comparing it to Europe in terms of market adoption and policy choices. Mm. And it was just astonishing to me that it was as if China didn't exist. And, you know, I think this is not good for the world, and it's not good for the U.S. either. And, so I think it's great that these efforts are happening, where U.S. and Chinese companies are working on standards, just because standards are so important. And, you know, I hope that this can continue.
Interrupt here? One of the things that I think Andy's right to say, that when politics enters the technological ethics development, that it does represent a danger on both sides, because I believe one of the feedback that came from the Chinese government was to remind all of the high-tech companies developing AI that all these products should promote the basic fundamental principles of socialism. Mm. Now, I don't think very many American politicians would agree with that, but that was one of the mandates put in China. I don't hear anyone in the United States saying we should put in basic principles of free markets and capitalism. And I think that's when you introduce these principles as a foundation which has to be promoted by the tools of technology and AI in particular, that's where the danger is. These tools should be, you know, ethically sound in terms of right and wrong, but it should not include political principles.
Mm. That's an interesting point, William. I think that's a very interesting point. But I guess this is where the discussions or the negotiations come in, right? How do you reconcile, you know, what are in some ways, you know, I think some very different ways of thinking about the world. And maybe it's not just with the principles of socialism, but other things as well. So I think, yes, but it's an important question. I completely agree with you on that.
Right. I went through those two documents. I think they're basically technical, nothing to do with politics. I don't think those big names, they won't get themselves involved in politics or anything like that. So maybe loosely related to our topic today, but it's good to see, like Andy just mentioned, it's good to see Chinese and American, companies collaborating on this issue. But just a small curiosity, you know, the lead authors of the LLM standard are all from the Ant Group. So I'm wondering what advantages they or the company has in this area. Why they're all, you know, the writers are from the Ant Group. Does any one of you can explain this? Maybe Andy? Are you familiar with the Ant Group?
Well, I'm not familiar with the specific details of this instance, but usually how the development of standards works is, you know, there's some larger convening organization like the International Telecommunications Union, et cetera. And then there's working groups created, and it's essentially, you know, on a voluntary basis. So whoever believes they have the expertise, the interest, the passion to work on particular things, volunteer. And of course, it's very much peer-driven as well that, you know, and I think your point is an excellent one that, you know, these are technical standards. So it tends to be more around, is there recognition and respect for the people leading the process in terms of their technical understanding. So, you know, that's the case. And again, I don't know the specific details in this instance that, you know, this particular group of individuals from a particular company were seen, you know, as being most interested, most qualified. You know, that doesn't seem beyond the realm of possibility, but it is a little surprising to me.
Well, with all these going on, also, obviously, the scams or any scandals involving artificial intelligence, the outlook there is something for judgment, I think. You know, UBS equity strategist Jonathan Golub downgraded six of the so-called Magnificent Seven, including Amazon, NVIDIA, and Microsoft, from overweight to neutral. He said the monumental earnings that catapulted these companies are collapsing, as some analysts warn that AI development is losing momentum. So, William, what's your observation there?
Well, I think there's a confusion. I know Jonathan Golub. He's a very bright analyst.
Right.
But I think he's confusing AI development as a technology with that of the semiconductor industry. The semiconductor industry, where NVIDIA is such a prominent part, has been highly cyclical over time. And what we've seen is that a lot of the non-AI related components of that semiconductor industry are starting to lose off in terms of momentum because the market for smartphones and other electronics has really died off, especially in China. So I think what he's talking about, the collapse of spending on AI, is really partly related to the collapse in semiconductor industry. That's one thing. I think, but the more important thing to keep in mind is that the Wall Street is 120% behind the whole AI movement because they see it as a huge source of productivity gain in the future that makes all workers more productive. And by doing so, makes the companies that employ these workers much more profitable. So for Wall Street, everyone is tossing as much as they can into the development of productivity-enhancing artificial intelligence. And I think the danger that people worry about is that we get such artificial intelligence like Skynet in the Terminator movie, right? Where, you know, the artificial intelligence apparatus believes that the biggest threat to the Earth is humanity, and they want to wipe out all human beings. And in the seminar where I was attending, half the time that the AI specialists, the academics who are developing AI tools, spent half their time trying to convince all the lawyers that there can never be a Skynet developed because the systems of ethics that are being used to develop these AI tools will never allow that to happen.
When you say NVIDIA's, you know, chip sales are, what's the word, cyclical, is that the word you
use? No, I'm saying that the industry that NVIDIA is part of is highly cyclical.
In what
NVIDIA
sense, then?
NVIDIA itself is just grabbing market share like crazy because it's the only game out there in producing chips that are useful for training these AI models.
All right. Dr. Joe, your interpretation.
Yes, we know that AI is, you know, in my imagination, it's just like the baby who are growing not only in one place. Maybe there are several babies are growing in different parts of the world, and some in China, in Asia, some in America. So they're growing in different ways. If we are having some standard, I think it's really important for us to have some, like the common the textbooks, to let them know which direction is better. I still remember that, you know, when I watched the movie of Terminators, the Skynet is a real terrifying. It's just you know, what we are talking about, the artificial intelligence. I think the artificial intelligence, the word of artificial, means that it tried to be intelligence, but in a different ways to train the computer or the system to be more intelligent. And that is sometimes it's not have a similar limit like the human, because we will have some time for our life, but they are longer, they are stronger, they are more able to deal with a lot of issues. So there are a lot of things, maybe for different technology, there are good things, there are bad things, but we want to make better use of the good things. So how can we deal with the differences between the good and the bad? We need some standards. That is important. But I don't think that the standards can define or, you know, to try to contain all the development of artificial intelligence, because they are developing based on their usage. Many businesses are using that, many consumers are using that. It's giving them more strength to develop those certain direction of abilities. But if some people are going to use the AI in the military use or terrorism, it may be dangerous. So I don't think that it is only the, you know, the competition between the different countries, but also between the different peoples in the world. It's really important for us to contain that. Because without the ability contain, I think it's very dangerous, like the Skynet. We can put something in the government-supported fund or system, but how can we put some standard of or rules in their computers, the dangerous groups?
And so you're saying that this sector is not losing momentum at all?
I don't think that it has reached its ceiling. There are still so many areas that it can expand, from the real retail to the, you know, logistics, to even to the science itself. It can make its own itself better, I mean, by the designing of a lot of things. That is also the reason why I said that in the financial areas, when we are having more abilities or seeing some of the events of the scams, maybe the AI system can do it better in the coming future, and it is much easier for them to do in the future. But we can still try to make some software to administering these things and make it not that easy to happen. Right. So these are some competitions.
The Chat Lounge. The Chat Lounge unpacks views and opinions on hot issues in a more casual way.
Then Andy, does the outlook of the AI sector still look as rosy as it was in the beginning?
Well, I think there's two very separate questions here. When we look at the Magnificent Seven, they're not just AI. NVIDIA, of course, is primarily, I think, lifted by the excitement over artificial intelligence. But as a category, I think one of the issues here might be interest rates and this idea that U.S. interest rates are going to be higher for longer. And this, of course, I think tends to have the biggest negative impact on growth stocks such as the Magnificent Seven. But we have to remember, too, that the company's stock prices and the underlying technology developments are very, very different, as we saw with the dot-com boom. And I think with artificial intelligence, we are not losing momentum at all. In fact, we are poised for, I think, really unappreciated transformations due to AI. And what I mean by this is not just the economic impact, but even the political impact. So I recently gave a talk about the political disruptions that can be brought by artificial intelligence if we compare it to the printing press.
Right.
So if we look at the printing press, it led to the Protestant Reformation, which caused the overthrow of the Catholic Church. Now, those that aren't familiar with this history may not appreciate, but at the time, the Catholic Church controlled about a third of all real estate in Europe. Mm. It was involved in every aspect of a person's life, from birth to marriage to death. And it was because of the printing press that Martin Luther was able to overthrow the political power of the Catholic Church. And we may see similar types of political earthquakes like this, but instead of playing out over centuries, it might play out over decades. So I don't at all think that AI has lost its momentum.
Right. Then in which fields do you expect AI technologies to have better application and development apart from, printing press you just mentioned or politics?
Well, I think from a business perspective and maybe a stock market perspective, it certainly looks like the enterprise adoption of artificial intelligence is going to be, a big driver of profits and maybe the price of companies' stocks like Microsoft, which, to me seems very well positioned to develop and implement enterprise solutions for artificial intelligence. I think, to me, another very exciting area is autonomous agents. So if we think about now, we use artificial intelligence to create text, create videos. But the next step is we can just say to, you know, an AI agent, again, you know, go buy me a house. I'll use the example, go buy me a house. It can go identify properties for you to go look at. It could go talk to mortgage lenders. It could arrange for the appraisal. It perhaps can even negotiate the price for you. And I think this is the next perhaps big growth area. And then the third area that I think is very interesting is AI moving down the technology stack. So right now we use AI as an application, whether on our laptop or on our smartphone. But as we saw at the Mobile World Congress, Samsung was one of the first to have AI on the device. And again, this is, I think, complementary to if you have AI residing on a piece of hardware, that makes it much easier and more likely to have these autonomous AI agents. So these are some of the areas that I think are quite exciting.
Definitely something more than just a ChatGPT. Well, what about a Williams pick?
I think I'm very anxious to find the Samsung cooktop that'll cook me the gourmet dinner without my intervening. So I'm looking forward to that development that Andy is forecasting. For me, here in the United States, one of the things that most people worry about is the state of our education. And the claim is that our education system is failing to train a lot of our young people. And in the future, I see AI as one way of letting someone with the equivalent of a high school education do the work of someone with a PhD, that the human interface behind a lot of the tools that are being used now can make someone with a low level of education an incredibly productive worker. And I gave a talk in Silicon Valley that said the challenge for machine and electronic developers is to do just that, to take someone with very little education and make them into an expert. You know, I've been looking for travel agents now to give me some advice on going to different parts of the world that I haven't been before. And can you imagine that, you know, someone with high school education would be able to pull out information about different countries and recommend different tours and recommend different ways of gaining particular, you know, points of view on different societies? Even if that person didn't have a lot of ability to go themselves, they can act in a way that puts in my input and turns out a package of vacations that I would enjoy very much. That right. kind of productivity enhancing technology is something that I think artificial intelligence is well poised to develop.
Right, AI does make our daily lives and work more convenient. What about Dr. Zhou? Any special sector or fields here in China that may have a better application of AI technologies?
Yeah, in my understanding, maybe there are three ways that we can expect the AI to perform better. The first is that we can let AI help us to develop the limits of our wisdom or intelligence. You know, the artificial intelligence is not only limited by our own abilities. So maybe in the math, in the physics, and also in some kind of chemistry, we have observed many of this discovery by the support of AI to design some of the structure of a certain substance and trying to do the experiments more efficiently, like for the different medicine development. Well, the second, I would say that the AI can help us deal with many complicated environment or issues, like the managing of the cities. You know, in China, they are also developing some of the wisdom cities, like they have the brain of the cities to coordinate the different parts, like for the traffic, like for many the medical cares or, you know, many of the emergency deliveries or a lot of these issues. They can help us to do that better and more efficiently. And also that is also, when we are having more EVs, it is possible for us to have better interactions between the different things. And the third one, I think that AI is not only in the virtual space, it's not only in the internet. So maybe it can be combined with the real things, like for the robot. So we are seeing that Tesla is trying to develop our human humanoid robot and trying to be use that in the factories.
Right.
I think the combination of the artificial intelligence and the real things are really surprising us. But, you know, it's just, when we're having a movie of the Matrix, we see that the dangers of depend everything on the AI. So maybe it can can have us let us to have more leisure time, but we still be careful about the boundaries and make it safe.
Talking about dangers, I'm wondering if there is any specific fields where the application of AI technologies is losing its growth momentum and maybe even be abandoned due to the challenges or dangers it poses. You know, like previously we mentioned the financial sector. Do you see any?
Let me jump in here.
Right, sure.
One of the discussions I've had lately is about our education system.
Right.
And the integrity of our education system. AI now is allowing people to cheat in a way that has never been possible before. And the ability to detect cheating has really put teachers at a challenge because it's with artificial intelligence, these people are turning in great essays, they're turning in math answers and problem sets that are just incredibly well done. And to be able to detect whether these people actually did it themselves or had some help is something that's going to challenge the education system.
Right. Andy, can you think of any?
I can think of lots of potential misuses of AI. Can't really think of any that, where, development should be halted. I mean, I know that obviously using AI for military applications is controversial in some quarters. I think that, again, maybe the solution is move forward, but at the same time, as best we can, ensure that the norms, the laws, the enforcement capabilities keep up in parallel to make sure we get the benefits while avoiding some of the negative impacts.
Now, I'm not saying we abandon it deliberately. I'm just saying it's a process of selection, right? It's because of the negative impacts it has, and then there comes the natural process where it's, deserted naturally by the sector.
It's hard to see that because, if our understanding of AI is correct, that it's a general purpose technology like electricity. So if you think about, a pre-electricity world and a post-electricity, that one, of course, there were obvious applications for electricity, but then people ended up using it for things that no one expected. And I think, that we might perhaps see the opposite versus, that there'll be many other things that we didn't realize that AI could be good for. I'll give you a very small example. In the U.S., I think apparently a lot of the drive-in fast food places, they're rolling out AI assistants, right? So when you drive up in your car, it's an AI bot that you talk to that interacts with you, right?
That's true. And what about Dr. Joe?
Yeah, in my understanding that AI is powerful, but they are much simpler than people. So maybe there are so many different AIs. We are not only talking about one AI. One AI maybe can be used to aim to control the other one. So how can we just make some, that task to coordinate is a really big challenge. And also, in my understanding that some of this the areas like for the peoples, the real reserved for the people, like for the religions, like for some kind of the mind games or these areas, maybe we need to protect it from the interaction or interfere with AI. So actually, I agree with the military, and it's also one of the areas we should try to, as possible as we can, to protect the AI to be involved, because that is destructive. It's very dangerous.
Right. It seems all sectors will have to embrace AI technologies despite all those shortcomings, if you will, it may have. Lastly, for the healthy development of the sector, what other or laws, regulations, and government support are needed? I understand that William just said those rules and regulations may not bear any fruit or may not be that effective, but the government got to do what it has to do, right? So.
Think that from my point of view, I would say that maybe we need to involve as more stakeholders we can, because their opinions is very important for their future life. And a lot of people are not so acquainted with AI. Maybe they need some trainings to have more knowledge about AI and then be involved in the discussion about some of the principles. Because we are not designing the AI system. They are simulating the real world, but they definitely will create their own in the future. So how can we just harvest them, and how can we make a better use of them? It's a really thing for all of us.
Be inclusive. And William?
Okay, well, I'd like to say that one of the things I've learned from the great financial crisis is to worry when an industry goes to government and say, we need some regulation from you guys. We need the government to help regulate us. Because just look what happened with the great financial crisis, right? When everything went wrong and the banking system and global banking system was near collapse, who did they blame? Did they blame the banks, or did they blame the Fed and the regulators? The regulators and the Fed were the first to get blamed because they said, hey, you're supposed to be watching out for stuff. Mm-hmm. How can you allow this kind of excess to happen and bring the world to a collapse like this? And I think AI is at the beginning stages of trying to shift the responsibility for preventing harmful effects from themselves as an industry to government, and to me that's a huge danger sign that says someone is trying to avoid being liable for and accountable for the work that they do. So for me, any industry or any company that says come regulate me, there's something wrong.
So are you anarchist?
No. There is a role for regulation, right?
Right.
But when the company says, hey, you got to help us prevent us from killing the world, that means that these guys are quite dangerous. And we have to be much more careful about accepting the role of the responsibility of a regulator. The regulator, right, is not the one that makes sure that nothing goes wrong. The regulator is, in some ways, the one that enforces damage and liability and punishes those that cause things to go wrong.
All right.
And I think when you have regulation, the first reaction by most people is, hey, the regulator fell asleep and allowed these excesses to happen. And so the blame goes on the regulator, not the banks that caused the excesses, or
right,
not the AI company that caused the dangerous development to happen.
Fair enough. Last but not least, Andy, please.
Well, I think the biggest piece that's missing right now is enforcement. So, we talked about standards, norms, the next step, of course, is specific laws. And then most importantly, of course, is the enforcement. And I think, again, if criminals are certain that they will be caught and punished, it doesn't matter how powerful the tools are. But we'll see much less of this kind of undesirable behavior. So to me, the real question, or the important question, is how quickly can we get to effective enforcement?
Right. You're suggesting like a harsh punishment, something like that?
Well, I'd say appropriate punishment, right?
Okay.
And I think that's quite important. And of course, we see this thousands of years of Chinese history as well, right? That for a healthy, vibrant society, you definitely need a foundation of respect for law and order. And a part of that is that, it's unfortunate, but there will always be criminals among us. And if criminals are not deterred, we have a less than optimal outcome.
That's thought-provoking. And on that note, we wrap up our chat for this session. Many thanks to Andy Mok, Senior Research Fellow at the Center for China and Globalization, William Lee, Chief Economist of the U.S.-based Milken Institute, and Dr. Zhou Mi, Deputy Director, Institute of American and Oceania Study, Chinese Academy of International Trade and Economic Cooperation, for sharing your time and insights with us. Show is available on all major podcast platforms. If you have any comments, please email radio@cgtn.com. I'm Tuyin. Thank you for listening. We'll have more chat at the Chat Lounge next week. Bye for now.
Sideline Story brings you all things sports related. The hottest topics, latest events, juiciest stories, all with a very personal take. Subscribe to Sideline Story Podcast for heated sports discussions covering events that are happening in China and around the world. Once upon a time, in a land not so very far away, stories were told of the brave and the bold.
The whole court fell silent to hear what the great warrior Mulan might ask for.
Of mighty deities and powerful immortals.
Immediately, the shimmering skin started to grow before his eyes.
Of fated love, and love sanctified.
In dawn's golden light, Niu Lang said,
"Marry me."
Of great journeys across fantastical landscapes.
So the cat and the mouse climbed on the dog's back, and the dog swam across the broad river.
In the company of friends and enemies and unimagined beasts.
Yeah. Good to see you.
Of ordinary folk with tantalizing stories to tell. Heroes and heroines all.
It's incredible. How did you do that?
Tales of sad sacrifice and victories snatched from the jaws of defeat. Stories of the wise, the accomplished, and the quick of mind. 5,000 years of amazing Chinese folk tales. You'll find Chinese Folk Tales Season 3 wherever you discover your favorite podcasts.